Today on our show,
we're counting down the top 10 Touchstone Pictures films.
Let's go. Welcome to episodes, 369,
dudes,
of the Countdown Podcast. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television, but not today, in order, so you don't have to. And Wayne, what are we doing?
Top 10 Touchstone films. Touchstone is a studio, yes, Paul?
It was a studio. It doesn't exist so much anymore. This was a sort of side Walt Disney Studios project,
sure,
which was established in the mid-80s by the Ron W. Miller, back then as Touchstone Films. And it was basically put together to distribute their PG-13 and R-rated films all the way through into the early 2010s.
Boom.
So it's a little bit more adult fare, and people don't often think about Touchstone as being Disney, but it was. It was basically just...
it's another offshoot.
Yeah, more adult Disney. So if you now in Australia go to, I think also in the States and probably in the UK as well, the Starz channel, the Disney Plus network, if you pay for that.
Yeah.
That's where all the Touchstone Pictures films now reside.
I was
wondering
why there's so much like ass and titties on the star thing. I was like, look at that, Disney. There you are.
So there it is. That's what we're going to be doing today. We're going to cover over the course of the next year or two, whatever, the most of the studios. And this is the next one that we're doing, having recently done Warner Brothers and something else, which I can't remember off the top. Oh, Canon Films.
Canon Films.
Off the top of my... That was the worst 10 Canon Films.
Yes,
wasn't
it? It was.
Yeah, maybe we'll do the best one of those at some particular point. So, yeah, that's really what we're doing today. And we get into every show proper. Actually, on the other side of this little story, Wayne.
What?
Today.
Yeah.
This weekend.
Yeah.
You may not be aware of this, but our... local council, it's put your shit out on the curb and get rid of it.
Put your shit out curb week. Yeah, go on.
Exactly what it's called on the website.
Curbside pickup.
Yeah, curbside pickup. And so we've been clearing out stuff. And so finally my wife had the hard word. She said, enough of your DVD shit.
Paul's been collecting DVDs since before CDs.
Well, not quite.
Yeah, almost.
She also said, enough of your CD shit.
Yeah, that's already ridiculous. But it's quite, I understand.
I had my first CD there from 1990.
Dude, everyone. Paul's never lost a CD in his life, okay? Paul said one to me one time years back in the day. He's like, have you ever lost a CD? I'm like, dude, I lost one coming here. And you're like, dude, and he's never lost one, which means this motherfucker has got library shit. And you know what? It's cool, though, because CDs were CDs. Remember when that shit came out?
My first CD was Aerosmith Pump.
Ah, mine was the soundtrack to Pretty Woman.
I'm not sure who's sadder there, to be really honest.
Definitely me.
That said, as a result, I went through all my CDs, got all the tracks off them that I don't have on my phone already.
What? You ripped them?
Well, just went through it. Oh, that song. So I downloaded it to Apple Music.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. There was five or six I couldn't find.
Oh, my
but
God. You got such an organized ass list. They're gone. Yeah.
So I was okay with letting go of the CD. I was a bit sad that, I mean, like, last CD I bought.
Are you still going to chuck them out?
Last CD I bought was Hans Zimmer in concert. So what was that, 3-4 years ago?
Yeah. Are you chucking them out?
All gone.
Dude, you should give them away on Facebook. Someone will cream their jeans.
Well,
some Faith No More fan.
This is the point that I wanted to make. Stuck all this shit out there yesterday about midday in big boxes. And there's a cat cage you put out there and a bunch of other random shit. A fucking old piece of shit vacuum cleaner with one of the ones you strap on your back like industrial cleaners
have. Oh, my God.
And this morning, when I went to throw out one extra thing that I'd forgotten about, everything is gone.
Dude.
Everything.
I'm not one bit surprised. I had dumpster divers outside my house.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
every single DVD, every single CD, the cat cage, the fucking broken vacuum cleaner, everything is gone. The only things that are left are a piece of shit, cat-covered, hair-covered little couch that your little kids sit on, and the extension of the vacuum cleaner, which I didn't bother to pick up for whatever particular reason. So someone just went, oh, fuck it, I can fix this, and
absolutely
and took it away.
Dude.
I am stunned by the vulture culture that we have going.
You know what? I initially am as well, but I actually find it quite, like, I'm sitting there going, you know what? I like the fact that people are repurposing shit.
Well, I must admit.
Do you know what I mean? Like, other than they're doing it into a landfill.
Rather than my CD library going into a dumpster somewhere.
Exactly.
It's nice that someone went home and at least decided to rip my music rather
than here's what happened, Paul. That person took all that shit and went straight to the pawn shop. And said, hey,
possibly,
can I get, for these 2,000 DVDs and CDs,
how much?
Yeah, $4 cash. So if you'd done that, my friend, you would be $4 richer.
The only thing that was left in the massive box of DVDs, I can't tell you, probably 400 DVDs, give or take. The only thing that was left was the special edition Total Recall DVD. Not the DVD itself and the tin, which came in a Mars kind of casing, but the little cardboard sleeve that told you it was the Total Recall DVD.
Oh, my God.
They left that behind but took the actual DVD.
What? That doesn't make sense. Maybe they didn't go to cash converters. But you know what? Did you check out the... Because me and Paul have the special edition Basic Instinct DVD. Gone. With the fucking...
Yeah.
This thing is encased in a thing that looks like ice.
Oh, maybe not, actually. I did rescue four or five and stick them amongst my Blu-rays.
It comes with an ice pick that's also a pen. It's fucking beautiful.
That one
I've still got that.
Yeah.
I don't even have a DVD player.
Well, that's one. Also, you can't play a DVD on the modern day televisions with modern day players and it not look like complete and utter fucking ass.
Oh, no. DVD is ass compared to your blue flaps or whatever you're doing, right? Yeah. But back in the
4K
day.
4K beyond that. Yep.
Well, back in that moment, you got to have a DVD. Yep. You know, that kind of shit. So, yeah, I understand. Man, it must be hard to let go of that shit. Optical media is like a callback from yesteryear.
Well, the problem is that if I ever stop paying Apple Music, then I'm going to remember all these songs.
Yeah, and you know what? I was using Apple Music, had all my shit sorted out, all my playlists, word to your mother, right? Backed off it, went to Spotify for a year, came back, shit's all gone. Yeah, what?
Yep, of course it would be. So I just thought that was worth sharing. It was a hard moment, and thank you for indulging me with that little discussion.
Next time on Old Cunt Corner.
All right. We'll be after this next segment, which kicks off, well, usually kicks off every show. It's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount?
Recount is our mailroom. Paul, what's up?
Well, let's just get to the pain part.
Yeah, let's hit this thing.
Congratulations to the B-Dizzle. Billy B-Dizzle. Dunn from the We Watch the Thing podcast. If you're not listening, well, of course you are now because you all voted for him. You all want the B-Dizzle in your house.
In your hizzle.
Yeah. Last week's show, the top 10 movie monologues where we performed them, B-Dizzle did a knockout Woody Allen impersonation.
Fucking gangster.
Did a slightly better than mine Christopher Walken impersonation. and otherwise brought his A game, although he got a disturbing amount of votes because of Mallrats, which was a ridiculous choice. But anyway, 38 of the possible 54 votes he took. So we've only ever lost one vote before on this show, and that was when you idiotically let all of Daniel and... Hendo, if you like, and Dean's relatives.
That's
into
right.
The group.
Now, I remember that. And I did that on purpose and I stand by it. But to illustrate your point, those motherfuckers had a campaign manager. Yeah. All right? They fucking did all kinds of shit, people coming in and stuff like that. This dude, B-Dizzle, no campaign manager at all.
Absolutely incredible effort. So well done, B-Dizzle. That is an absolute smashing. I just don't know where to start in terms of giving feedback. But Julio the Contrarian said, Paul called it. Billy has my vote. But also, this was the greatest episode in the history of, and I don't think I'm exaggerating here. Time! So thank you for that, Julio.
Thank you.
John Amento from the Pilot Comics podcast said, Billy wins for putting Jaws where it should be, number one. You all lose for not including Tears in Rain from Blade Runner.
I thought about it.
There you go, John.
There you go, John. Can you make on that? Is that cool for you now?
You can go to sleep tonight, safe in the knowledge that Wayne thought about that.
That's right, and then didn't do shit about it.
David Power said, Julio would have beaten me to it. But Woody wins for Billy this week. Plus Princess Bride and Marriage Story. I have to admit, Princess Bride did hurt me a little bit, and I did acknowledge that point. You may hear my voice react. Ooh,
yeah, he forgot.
It totally won at that particular one. Mike goes in. I got 10 votes, by the way. You got 6, so I fell over the line to double figures. 38.
I didn't even get like motherfuck.
Doesn't matter.
See, so there's no cousin voting block, right? Them shits didn't even turn up on my shit. No,
so here's what happens with the cousin voting block. They're smart. No. Well, Mike is. They go, the writing's on the wall here. Let's not bother voting. Or at least let's vote with the winner. And then it doesn't look like it's a cousin voting block. I get you, motherfuckers.
Oh, bitch, please. That's not how it works at all. Bitch, please. That ain't even working.
Robert Fuller said, Billy had more of my favorites within his top 10, so I am a turncoat with my vote. I like Paul's for sure, but no love for Army of Darkness's Boomstick? Not even in top 10? I'm shocked. Great episode, gents.
You know, after a show like this, I sit there going, yeah, I could use that one. Yeah, I could use that one. And damn it.
Joe Doherty said, be dizzle for shizzle.
Damn right.
Well, there you are. An absolute shellacking is the only way to refer
my
to
my asshole
it.
Is red raw.
Normally now, we would jump straight into the countdown after a word from the very important event coming up live stream for The Cure. But we're going to delay that by one segment because I have some shit to say.
Bring it.
Sick Gal Watch.
I haven't had one of these in a while. Go on.
Long-term listeners to the show will know that Wayne famously, a couple of years ago, probably 5 years ago, challenged Steven Seagal to a fight because he said he's so fat and so shit at Aikido, there's no way that Wayne could lose. Steven Seagal nor his team have deigned to comment.
Can't imagine why.
So therefore, we just assume he has lost. But in the process, we have learned more and more about Steven Seagal and what a shit human being he truly, truly is.
Absolutely.
Now, I want to give a big shout out here to Surfman Scott on Twitter, who drew my attention to a podcast series about Seagal. Three episodes. It was initially slated to be two, but they found so much shit about him, they went on for three. Run by Dave Anthony and Gareth Reynolds, who I also mentioned because they're both touring as comedians in through Australia at the moment. American podcast called The Dollop.
Okay.
Ever heard of it?
Nope.
They, from start of Steven Seagal's career to the end of his career, like as recently as not quite the news, just recently where he was in some Russian oligarch's birthday parties shit like that.
Moscow,
But they just have presented, allegedly, all the shit he has done through the course of the years.
Okay.
Of which I just want to emphasize one point now, because you know, full credit to them, they've done the research and whatever else, and they cite their sources all the way through, at least Dave does. Steven Seagal's voice is very famous.
Yeah, that glow, yes, gravelly like shit, yes.
I think once or twice I went out at night, so I'm going to talk like Steven Seagal.
Yes, all I remember this happening.
Back when we used to think he was cool.
Yeah, he's like, I'm talking like Steven Seagal all night. Yeah.
Completely an affectation.
Really?
Apparently, according to one of his four ex-wives, is it three ex-wives? I forget. He's got seven kids to so many different women.
Uh-huh.
Normally, he has one, at least two wives at once and then divorces one to move on to the third. But anyway, he has a very high-pitched girly voice.
What?
Now, that's not the most important thing. And I want you to go over and check out The Dollop. I don't want to steal
that
all
means
their
every single time he ever spoke.
Yeah. He just decided.
He's doing this thing.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work to keep that shit up.
Uh-huh. Oh, because apparently he talks like this.
I know. Mickey Mouse be all like trying to Aikido your ass and
Stephen
shit like
Kernahan
that.
Stephen Kernahan has a lot to admire at this point in time.
God damn. Okay, that's interesting. And also difficult to keep up, but also makes sense given what a wanker he is.
Oh, he also almost ran for governor somewhere at some particular point.
Not a big
surprise.
And
they thought that he was going to win. But some of the disturb, and like they're comedians and they do yuck it up and whatever else, but even they find moments where Steven Seagal, if we weren't already aware, it's basically 4.5 hours about his life.
Mm.
It is him lying about everything.
Oh, yeah. He lied about meeting Bruce Lee. And it's literally impossible. He said Bruce Lee and Brandon Lee, they met, he's their sons. And they weren't even alive at the same time. It couldn't have happened.
I know we opened a can of worms here, and we're never going to go down to the extent that, but we have declared war on Seagal. And it might be time, Wayne, this week we don't have anything to review. There's no big film coming out. Moon Knight's not finished. There's nothing to really review this week.
And you don't want to see The Lost City. So, yeah.
Oh, God. Do I have to go to the cinema?
No, we don't.
Yeah. No, all right. Well,
no, we don't have to. Let's just
we'll think about it.
Keep going.
We have declared war on Seagal, and we are going to skewer his films.
Oh, yeah.
One at a time.
I'd love to skewer a Seagal film.
By picking a Steven Seagal film and just pulling it to shreds.
Done and done.
That's another option we could do.
Let's do that.
It's time to take the war to him.
You pick a film, it's on.
All right. Well, there we are. That's what's happening on our review coming up next week after this one for this because, my God, I was horrified listening to this shit. He is not just a sex pest. Mm. He's not just a chancer who pressures people with his star power for sex. There's a legitimate argument to say he is a sex slaver, which is not funny in any way, shape, or form. Yet they continue to hire him to do shit like be on Highwayman or what the fuck that TV show
is
was.
Is that still on?
No.
He's too fat to be on the frame.
According to The Dollop, he's in four different states, he's registered as a deputy fucking sheriff, even though he has allegations of sex trafficking against him.
Yeah, but you can register yourself for any old shit. You can be a minister over the phone. You know, it's I don't know. It's different.
County laws are different. I can't believe the turd that this man is. He might be the very worst star that's ever come out of Hollywood.
Yeah, that's a contender. I've never heard anyone say a kind word about him. How's that?
Anyway, on that bombshell,
yes.
Or not, let's get into something much more positive, raising money for the fight against cancer. On the other side of, well, this.
Hello, everyone. My name is Nick. I'm the host of Nikolai's Kitchen, and I'm also the host of the annual Live Stream for the Cure. Live Stream for the Cure is a charity event where we raise money with content creators and podcast partners from around the world for the Cancer Research Institute, a wonderful nonprofit researching cancer immunotherapy, training the body's immune system to fight all forms of cancer. This is a mission and a future that I truly believe in. And myself and my team worked tirelessly over the past 5 years to raise over $50,000 for this cause. This year, we're aiming for our biggest single goal to date of $20,000, and we cannot do it without your help. Please join us for the event May 19th through the 21st, starting at 9 a.m. Eastern, for 45 hours of content from people all over the world. Together, we can bring hope for a future immune to cancer. The more eyes we reach, the more dollars we raise. Please help us in making this goal a reality. Together, we can make a difference.
The Top 10 Touchstone Pictures Films is the subject of this week's Countdown, Wayne. Pretty straightforward. We had the list there.
Yeah.
Was it difficult? Was it easy? How'd you find this list?
Yes. The only bit that was difficult about it was that there's a lot of scenes. There's a lot on here that I've talked about before. So I'm like, I tend to kick a few of them out. So you'll probably be particularly pissed off at one glaring
omission.
Yes, but I had to put some other stuff in here because what was cool is that I look back on it and it's like, oh, these are all these films that, like, some of them are old, some of them are new, some of them are in between, and a lot of these aren't particularly popular, but I always had a personal attachment to some of them. So
I found this,
it's a favorites list,
really hard to order, other than my one, which was clear from the get-go. Very difficult to order. Probably, as you said, some of these are absolutely, we mentioned them a lot on the show. Wayne and I started to have discussions about what we might change on the show around that.
Yeah, so we don't have to hearing about the same thing over and over.
Yeah. But there's a few here that I don't talk about very often, which I'm happy to throw out there and mention. So,
yeah, a lot of them are middling, so that's why it's hard to put them in a specific order. Yeah. Like, this is 4 versus 10, 5, whatever, you know.
Well,
yeah.
There's 3 of these films are on my top 100 films of all time list. Only 3. The rest are not.
Oh, okay. Nice. Well, that's good. That's working. I'm enthusiastic, at least, about it.
All right. Well, I'll kick us off then.
Hit it.
My number 10 is an M. Night Shyamalan film.
Oh, really?
Yes. It's called Signs.
Hello. Sounds good, motherfucker.
Starring Mel Gibson, Joaquin Phoenix. And a Culkin brother, as well as a Breslin, Abigail Breslin. This is the, and of course, Shyamalan himself. This is the film about alien invasion where stupid shit does defeat them ultimately. But this was creepy, this film.
Dude, this film is the shizzle. So, like, I remember this is back when we didn't know, like, M. Night had not turned, like, all fucking
shit.
Yeah. So, Mel Gibson, he's the farmer guy who's trying to protect his family against this onslaught of, well, alien sort of invasion. Joaquin and Abigail Breslin is actually as cute as a button as well. So the little kid that she played really well. But when there's that sort of footage, it's this footage that they show on TV of a news report.
Scares the shit out of you, that part.
Yeah, they got these kids, they're all going up in some party and they're up against the window and they look out and there's this cornfield or something and you just see this thing jump out between the things just for a second. And it was scary as hell. And I was like, oh, shit, that got me. And lots of little movie, like, moments like that happen in here. I like that. So I think this is among his best work, I would say.
Can't believe he was 20 years old. I've only seen it twice, right around the time
it came out. Was he 20 when he did this?
No, I'm saying it was 20 years old.
Yeah, okay, shit. Yeah, no, it's just, bloody hell. but yeah, it was a great show.
Good thriller, good moments of tension. And yeah, it's a real shame that M. Night's career has gone the direction that it has because... I know you love Unbreakable and...
You didn't like Unbreakable?
It's all right.
Really?
Of course, Sixth Sense. It was some such early promising
signs. So Sixth Sense is probably his best film.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is up there. This is in his top threes.
Yeah. Yeah. I had no disagreement at all there from as far as I'm concerned. All right. So that's my number 10.
Very nice. Now, my number 10 is a movie I'm quite enthusiastic about, and no one else will have picked this, but I love this film. It's Deuce Bigalow, Male Gigolo. dude, I'm telling you, for real, all right? Everyone, in case you haven't seen this, Deuce Bigalow is a less than attractive down-on-his-luck aquarium cleaner, and one day he wrecks the house of this gigolo dude that was, like, who's in The Mummy, and then he needs quick money to repair it, so the only way he can make it is to become a gigolo himself. And he takes on an unusual mix of female clients. His fee is $10. He encounters a couple of...
This is the dumbest shit anyone ever said in the history of an alien, you motherfucker. I think I'm exaggerating here.
Kiss my time. Ass. He encounters, like, all kinds of problems and he's, you know, falls in love with the clients. It's a basically romantic comedy, kind of, not really, but I maintain that 98% of the gags in this movie land.
Oh.
Boom, 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 boom. I was expecting nothing.
You're mocking me.
No, aren't you? I was expecting nothing. And I'll tell you something else. This is I almost put European Gigolo on here.
No.
Because that one's Cocaine's almost better in a different way. All right?
Oh my God, more the European. Gags,
no, but just think that. I mean, it's hard to take out of context.
Do you think the next Juice Bigalo film would have been Christmas Gigolo?
No, it would have been.
Because they're following the. Obviously, the National Lampoon.
Oh, is that what they're doing?
I don't know if they are, but that's the way it works out.
No, of course they're not. Hey, I'll watch the shit out of Christmas Lampoon Poontang Gigolo, all right?
What?
Whatever they call it, right? But this movie, man, I was so impressed because I thought Ross Ryder was shit. And since he has proven to be quite shit. But this here is a magical script,
and
man.
And strangely, during.
Dude, everything lands. I laughed over and over in this film. This is a great film. And almost, the second one is almost better, but I just put this one here first.
Just stop saying that, please.
I'm telling you, it's the shit. Does anyone else dig Gigolo, man? It's funny as shit, bro. Funny as shit. Side gags even learning. Wicked stuff, wicked stuff. Yeah, so that's it. Definitely my number 10.
My number 9 was up and down this list. But I had to admit in the end it was a long time since I'd seen it. And I have such good memories of it. I don't know if I want to rewatch it, if I'm really honest.
Mm-hmm.
High Fidelity.
Low, I believe. Yes, low, I believe. No, yes, low. No, yeah, low.
Definitely low. Okay.
Definitely low.
So, based on Nick Hornsby's novel, directed by Stephen Frears, it stars John Cusack as a guy who's realizing he hasn't got his shit together based on reflecting on his life and his loves through that time. Jack Black is his assistant at the record store that he works at. Just trying to remember who the other person was. It was
the chick.
It wasn't Joan Cusack, was it? No.
No, it was that girl with the weird hair.
Yes, anyway.
Anyway, her, yeah.
Her and their... back and forth, very funny based on...
Well, that's why it's cool because he's... Now, remember, this thing came out when we were probably age-appropriate.
25.
25, and we were like mid-20s or whatever. And he has problems with women, and I can attest. And he then goes back to essentially interview and talk to each one of his ex-girlfriends to try and figure out why they broke up with him in order to fix himself. Now, Paul, that's an excellent idea.
Great. And the novel's really good too.
This is one of the few movies that actually made me go read the novel. I was surprised to find out it was set in England. And the Jack Blackness of it all, I love it.
Probably
I
know the one time that Jack Black has worked.
Well, according to you, in Jumanji as well.
Oh yeah, so, good point. He's twice done well.
Man, that fucking... what's that fucking song? The song he does at the end, Jack Black, right?
Yep.
Marvin Gaye song. That is so killer, the way to end it like that. It's like, oh, this guy can actually sing. And they're like, oh, this is kind
of
cool.
Of course he can sing. He was the lead singer of Tenacious D.
That does not mean he can sing.
How dare you, sir.
It's funny. When Jack Black plays the guitar, it looks like he's faking playing the guitar. That's just how he moves. Look at him. Next time you see him, check that out.
Is that how good he is? He can make competent guitar playing.
Well, his comedy chops overtake everything. So that's why I like him, I think. But yes. High Fidelity is a great goddamn film. And... low.
And I love the listing, obviously, in this film.
Oh, God, this, shall we say, the list. Yeah.
Top 5 breakup songs.
Yes. Essentially what we're doing here.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's no doubt that there's some DNA in the countdown that comes from High Fidelity. So, yeah.
Cool. All right, for my number 10, bombshell to another bombshell, Paul. Again, what happens is the first half of this...
A lot of bombshells in this episode.
No, the first half of my list is like my quirky bullshit choices.
Right.
The top 5, you'll go, yeah, of course, that's on there.
Yep.
Okay? So my number 9 is a film that I've always liked, and it's a little bit of a guilty pleasure. It's called Enemy of the State.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I'm not a big fan, but I...
Okay, so...
I'm not a big fan. I'm 3 stars. Fine.
All right, so this has got, Slap Boy, Will Smith, and and Gene Hackman. Also Slap Boy, from what I've heard. John Voight is in it as well, and he's a corrupt national security agent, and he has a congressman assassinated to assure the passage of an expensive new surveillance legislation. The whole movie is about your rights being dissuaded and Big Brother's watching and all that sort of shit. And the videotape of the murder ends up in like Will Smith's hand. He's like a lawyer, and it's a cat and mouse chase. He enlists Gene Hackman, who's an ex like conspiracy spy dude who knows tricks and shit like that. The reason I like this film is because, Paul, it's all about EDC. This film is all about everyday carry, okay?
Oh, God.
It is about the government hiding bugs in various of Will Smith's personal items, like his push-button Philips mobile telephone. It was back before the iPhone. He had a Mont Blanc pen, his suit, his shoes. It's actually kind of cool. And the way that it plays out is that Gene Hackman's like an old school guy, but he knows how to do shit. Like, if you collect all the bugs from the enemies, put them in a foil chip packet, and then put it on the floor, and then they can't track you. And it's like, wow! New young kid wouldn't have known that shit. And that's what's always funny about these sort of... it's actually a late 90s film, and it's about technology. So it's a little bit like Disclosure, where you look at it and you look at the advanced technology and you're like, because now we're in this age. But it's still very amusing and cool to go. It's very far ahead of its time in educating society on its, like, the diminishing freedoms type thing.
Bruckheimer production.
Bruckheimer, baby.
But who directed this film?
It was directed by... Tony Scott,
It was Tony Scott.
Tony Scott, yeah, baby. I so, you know, a little under siege. I mean, no, What's it called? What's the
True Romance?
No, what's the submarine movie he did?
Crimson Tide.
There you go. So, yes. But it's as a result, it is very Tony Scott and very close up, very action-y, that kind of shit.
The thing that I remember most about this movie, which is really sad, is I think early in the film, he's going to buy his girlfriend lingerie.
Yeah.
And
yep.
He goes up to the very attractive...
Now, first of all the sales staff in this lingerie shop, which looks like a nightclub,
yep,
is just dressed in lingerie looking around. And he goes,
which is, of course, what happens in lingerie shops, right?
Well, he wasn't. I guess he's in LA or something. I'm not sure. I don't
obviously,
know.
I was joking when I said that.
Not in the ones I've been to, Paul, no.
Right. And he goes up to said very attractive... And, well, what size is she? I don't know. And he looks at her and goes, well, way bigger.
No, she points at her tits and goes, this size? And he goes, oh, no, she's way bigger than that.
And I'm like, oh.
And then she slapped him. So...
No, she didn't.
No, she didn't. Oh, Will Smith. Right, I'm making a statement. Sorry, yeah, all right. So, yes, again.
This is Will Smith, and he was all charming and shit.
That's right. This is before the Slapgate. So, you know, that's how we do. Yes. Enemy of the state. Not at all an enema of the state.
You crowbarred it in. But like my number 8, I'm going to crowbar this one in. Prepare yourselves one of the loudest lows, I should say, in podcasting history.
Oh, dear.
When I announce my number 8 is The Prestige.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I can't even muster. My arm is not long enough for the jerk-off motion in my soul right now. That's all that shit is. So wow.
Instead of me talking about why I think this is a pretty good film, let's hear Wayne talk about why it's an amazing film.
Yeah, everyone. Okay, everyone, let's just talk about The Prestige. In case you're not familiar, it is a period thriller set in Edwardian London where these two rival magicians, they're partners until the tragic death of an assistant during a show, and then it starts like this feud shit. One is Hugh Jackman, one is Batman, and like...
Christian Bale. Christian Bale. We need to specify. It wasn't R. Pats, nor Michael Keaton.
You're right. It's Christian Bale.
Or Val Kilmer, not even George Clooney.
Well, that's what the
not
film...
even, believe it or not, Adam West.
It is, however, Kevin Conroy. That's the animated piece. Anyway, so these guys become massive like rivals, and they try and desperately uncover the secret of this particular routine, and they can't figure out how this one guy's doing it. And what is cool about the film is the idea of the actual the way that it's told is such that you almost kind of the movie itself is giving a narrative arc. Like The Prestige, for example, is the part of a magic trick where, let's say you've made something disappear, that's not enough, you've now got to bring it back. That's called The Prestige. And this movie is actually put together in that way, where there is a prestige in its final act, and it's like, oh, but it's just internally rewatchable, this film.
Wayne likes to throw me on the bus whenever he can, saying Paul played Dungeons and Dragons. Wayne has had a very healthy interest in magic for a lot of his life.
I have. Look, it's led to
now. Who's the cool cunt?
It was never me. But like, look, I've had more than a few times people call me Barney Stinson, and he's also very into magic. So
I'm not sure they're calling you Barney Stinson because of the interest in
that's
magic.
That's what they're doing, Paul. Shut up. So, yes, absolutely. But like, it's more that like, because being a magician is nerdy.
Correct.
And it's a very nerd thing to do, and you don't get a lot of sex. So what happens is...
Incorrect.
I'm not a magician for the record, right? So
correct.
But I do love the idea, and I bought a magic trick once in Vegas, which I have never had the balls to throw out on anyone. It's beautiful, ooh, Paul.
Can we
it's
film fun. It?
Okay, maybe. I'm going to practice for 2 years.
For the Countdown Podcast channel, the first ever unveiling of Wayne doing a magic trick.
Oh, that would be... actually,
maybe we should
go
for a live stream for a cure.
Is it videotaped?
We'll have the video on.
No, man, that's too much. It's live. I need a few takes. All right, motherfucker.
Perfect magic. We need a few takes to
get
it right.
Yo, yeah, it's not like I've been doing this for 10 years like Hugh Jackman. There you are. But yeah, sorry, The Prestige is probably the best film you'll ever see. There you go. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, last week's winner, B Dizzle, has a thing on his show called B Dizzle's Big Call, and he hits a button and it plays the sound. That is the biggest of all fucking calls ever.
I'm telling you, man. It's not much
are you saying this is the best Nolan film?
Yeah.
You are.
Wait. Sorry.
Incorrect.
It could be The Dark Knight, right? It could be The Dark Knight, but if it's not that, it's this.
So, hello, Inception?
Inception's right underneath.
Oh.
It's just underneath, okay? It's just underneath. Ain't no damn Tenet in sight. So.
Fine, I get Tenet that you don't love Tenet, but don't. Damn.
Yeah.
All right, my number 7 then is, because I did such a good job of selling The Prestige at number 8. My number 7, oh, wait, do you need to do your number 8? You do.
Yes, I do. Okay, yes. My number 8 is The Count of Monte Cristo. I love this fucking film.
What the fuck?
Yeah, bitch. The Count of Monte Cristo has got Jim Caviezel in it, as well as Guy Pearce, and a very young Henry Cavill playing the son. And it is a classic story of the... No! You don't like this film? This is the tits.
I remember thinking this was balls.
This is the balls, man. Like, it is literally the Count of Monte Cristo story where an innocent man wrongly but deliberately imprisons his brilliant and his strategy for getting revenge. Long story short, Jim Caviezel and Guy Pearce are friends, and it's in that time, you know.
Well, let me guess, Guy Pearce is the bad guy.
Well, yes, but what happens is Guy Pearce realizes, like, he's digging like Jim Caviezel's fiance because she's tight, and so what he does is he kind of betrays him and makes him go away to prison, where he gets locked in this fucking like island prison shit for 13 years. But while Jim Caviezel's in prison, he meets this motherfucker, like an inmate, who teaches him how to sword fight and shit. And then before that motherfucker dies, he gives him a treasure map, says go find this treasure. He finds the treasure, comes back to the like mainland, all these people 13 years later, and calls himself the rich Count of Monte Cristo. And then
the rich what of Monte
the
Cristo?
Rich Count of Monte Cristo. And then by this time, he sees that Guy Pearce has married his old woman and he's like got a kid with him and shit like that, and all this stuff happens. And essentially,
sounds a lot like The Northman.
They're all these. Well, this was written before The Northman, I'm guessing. This is an old ass tale, this Count of Monte Cristo.
Oh, yeah, but I'm saying like, but it wasn't written before these, Viking legend.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like,
the bard fought them.
Well, this is why it's cool, though, because the way it's executed, like, this motherfucker turns up in a balloon. And like everyone's like, holy shit. And he's like, greetings. And it's fucking ballsy. Sweet, man.
Stupid, but ballsy.
Wicked sword fighting as well. It's one of those fun-ass tales, man. I'm telling you, this is a great thing. Superman is in it when he's like 2 years old.
Who gives a shit?
I'm telling you, I do, because it's the shit, man. This is a great-ass movie. Great film. Great
film. This film was really,
I can't
really
believe you didn't
shit.
Like it.
No, it didn't do it for me at all. Whereas my number 7.
Let's hear it.
As much as we redid it not that long ago as a review when we were scrambling for content during the worst of the COVID age.
Mm.
It didn't quite hold up as well as I remembered it, because this used to be my favorite one of this guy's films.
Yeah.
So it slipped down the list a bit, but still had a lot of fun. It's stupid, stupid. No arguments. In fact, there's a few of my films that have come out that are fairly stupid.
Welcome to my world.
Con Air.
Slightly low.
Slightly low, okay.
So I was almost going to not do this, yep. But like I understand. You can't. This is Con Air is Con Air, bro. It's Con Air, son.
The film where Nicolas Cage is, well, he's not wrongfully imprisoned, but was...
He is wrongfully imprisoned.
He did murder someone.
No, but they stole...
They attacked him and almost...
And then someone took away the knife that they threatened him with. Yes. So they were... He is wrongfully imprisoned.
All right, let's go wrongfully imprisoned. It gets put on a plane full of the worst convicts ever strange reason. And John Cusack is the FBI agent on the ground. And John Malkovich is the worst of all of the inmates. And Steve Buscemi is in this weird shit role, doesn't need to be in the film.
Oh, I don't know. I thought it was interesting.
And, of course, he becomes the mole in the air trying to keep his friend alive who's dying going to diabetic shock.
Mm-hmm.
And it's completely and utterly ridiculous and outlandish. And it's hilariously good fun.
It's awesome, bro. This is the film, like, people call this the Nicolas Cage trilogy. This, another one, which I won't mention in case it turns up.
Yep.
But I mean, look, we talk about this a lot. You've probably known a lot. So I actually busted out some fucking my intel about this shit. Check this out. John Cusack considers Con Air a bad movie and hated the time he spent working on it. He only did it because he said the money, and two, to use it as leverage to make his own indie passion projects. That's a little harsh.
How did that work out for you, John?
Yeah, I know. What's he doing lately?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe he had a good run right after that. Willem Dafoe and Mickey Rourke auditioned for the part of Cyrus the Virus. And during Rourke's audition, he improvised by producing a razor-sharp Bowie knife in his audition. Terrifying and impressing the director.
Let's not fucking hire this guy who brings a fucking proper knife to
and
audition.
And they said they still went with John Malkovich, so you know, what are you going to do? Also, Patrick Swayze was considered for Cameron Poe, right?
You can see that.
As well as a bunch of other motherfuckers. And John Malkovich does not think highly of this film.
Yet it's the only film where John Malkovich can be rushing at Nicolas Cage on top of a fire engine in a fight mano a mano to the death.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. He didn't like it because apparently they hadn't finished writing his character by the time he had started filming. So he's like, I don't know where this character's supposed to end up, so I don't know how to play this moment. And that kind of shit's happening. So it still worked out, though.
That's some proper acting shit. You're a bad guy, John. Just make him be bad.
No, but I understand that if you're like, I don't know how this guy ends up. So the thing.
Probably dead given the movie that we're in.
But given what meaning then do I give to this moment here? You know what I mean? I understand. By the way, J.J. Abrams did a script polish.
Did he?
On this. So there you go.
All right, that's on. We'll see, because I've been still a lot of Wayne's Thunder so far. In fact, all four of my picks are higher on Wayne's list.
Well, you won't have this one, Paul. My number 7 is Reign of Fire.
I did have an honorable mention.
Oh, did you? Yeah. I didn't know if you liked this one. Everyone.
I did, but it's so dumb I couldn't.
Yeah, it's great. Everyone, in Random Fire is this, right? In present day London, there's this 12-year-old boy named Quinn. He watches as his mom gets like wakes an enormous fire-breathing beast from its centuries-long slumber, and then it just cuts to 20 years later, and much of the world has been scarred by this fucking dragon and its offspring. It's overrun by dragons and shit.
Post-apocalyptic.
And then he's become a fire chief, and he's responsible for warding off the beasts and keeping the community alive. And then everyone's fucking miserable. It's like fucking post-apocalyptic shitness, right? And then Kim comes fucking, all right, Matthew fucking McConaughey, right? And he's a fucking hotshot American. He's called Van Zan. He says, I got a way to kill the beasts. And that's what this film was about. This is the man's fight against the dragons. And man, I love the shit out of this film. There is so much cool crap going on. Christian Bale is a sort of like grumpy cunt, like all the way through. But the Van Zan dude is such a gangster. He shaved his head. He's got a big beard. And the way he, like, this is not spoiler, the way he buys the farm is the best shit ever.
It was pretty funny.
By launching himself into the mouth of a fire-breathing dragon in the air. Like, it's just, you legend. That's how you go out, son. But other than that, it was a really cool film. No. That's not, I still don't want to get eaten by a dragon, but I know what you mean. Like, this is like, for the film and the way it's shot, it's beautiful, man. Very dark, but because of all the fire and shit everywhere.
Directed by Rob Bowman, one of the X-Files directors.
That's right.
Do remember correctly.
I'm glad to hear that it was on your honorable mention.
Yeah, look, I have to admit, I was surprised by how few of the Touchstone Picture films I love, but there's a lot that I like.
Yeah. These are all middling ones, and that's why it's like you know about it. There's a lot of Danny DeVito stuff with Touchstone.
Here's one that I sort of shopped down the list for my number six, which, again, I'm a little bit afraid to return to and watch because I think if I do, it will suffer a bit of a Connery phenomenon. Kind of whereas, you know, my top couple I've watched again very recently, and in fact, even four and large parts of five, and three. But six, Air Force One.
Get off my plane.
Get off my plane.
Yeah, Air Force One.
Dug the shit out of this Wolfgang Peterson hit. With, of course, Gary Oldman doing a great job as the villain of the piece. And Harry Ford is the president of the United States, who's an ass kicker and an ex-serviceman, I believe.
Yeah, he used to bust ass himself.
And so when his life and his family and his presidency are threatened, he is the man who turns it around, which is pretty laughable when you consider some of the presidents that we've had. Or if you try to consider, can you imagine, what's the equivalent of Air Force One for Australia? Qantas Flight 1 down.
Business class lounge.
ScoMo.
I don't believe Australia has an actual plane that's just for the PM. No.
Well, they should fucking rectify that.
Oh, that's so funny.
Anyway, that's dumb because it's very dumb to consider any Australian leader, maybe other than Bob Hawke, who might try and drink someone under a table.
Yeah, that kind of thing. We just don't do that.
But Harry Ford in that role is completely believable.
He was the ass-kicking president, man, and that was why it was cool. Because also, first of all, Indiana Jones is going to do that, right?
Yep.
But second of all, like, I don't know, this is a long time ago. This is when it was so easy to believe in that, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, this is kind of cool.
1997.
97, bro. We were just...
The heyday of Touchstone Pictures.
We had no idea. And the one thing I will say about this film is that at the end, spoilers, when the plane, Air Force One, crashes into the ocean, they get out just in time kind of thing, William H. Macy... CGI of the plane hitting the water it looks like
I'm sure it'll be shit now.
It looks like polygon graphics. It looks right. Even back then I was like, holy shit.
Oh wow. If it you know, it was on your radar back then,
it wasn't great, but you know, they ran out of money because they were paying Harrison. So but even despite that, awesome film. Absolutely fun.
All right, that's my number six. Wayne, what's yours?
It's my number six is Signs, bro. That's where I put it. What? Yet? Yeah. So
very nice. I'm back glad to you, man. It's on your list. Number five is a film that I watched a fair bit of it again today for the second time.
The hell you
didn't get through it all, but I managed to see most of the best clips of it on YouTube. And it really is a good film and no doubt inspired by my review of or recent viewing of The Northman because it hits a lot of the same beats. It's called Apocalypto, directed by Mel Gibson.
I never saw it.
Very good. Like, we all know Mel Gibson.
Don't worry. He's out now. He's out. He's out of movie jail.
This
he's
might even movies. Be my latest film on the list from 2006. And this one is set in the Mayan civilization, sort of era late 1400s, early 1500s, I think.
Sure.
And it follows a warrior from one particular tribe who is captured and taken for sacrifice by another tribe. And he escapes. And then his pursuers are trying to kill him. He's trying to get back to his family who are in a precarious position. And it's fucking awesome.
Now, it's all some Aramaic shit, right? It's like the subtitles, right?
Not Aramaic.
I don't know. What is it?
Mayan.
What is Aramaic? Is that Jesus?
It's definitely not South American.
I don't know, motherfucker. It's all like pyramids and shit, isn't it?
Mayan pyramids are not pyramids. I know, good.
I know. Good.
Making sure. Anyway, it's got all what you think of a Mel Gibson film. It's brutal. It's violent. It's trying to be relatively historically accurate, though, of course, people have picked it apart. But there's not one word of English spoken in this entire film. It's all subtitles.
Right.
To mean, like The Passion of the Christ, to be authentic now, to the time.
Is it some violent shit?
Yeah, it's some absolute violence.
Yeah?
Yep.
So, wow.
Arrows and spears through people and people's heads being cut off and sacrificed and, you know.
Damn! Yep.
So, but still awesome, right?
Yeah, really enjoyed it. And you really get behind
a lot of people say that.
This young fella and hoping that he can survive against the odds. And it is that against the odds survival story. It kind of flies by for its 2 hours and 20 minutes runtime. So,
wow.
Yep.
Okay. Apocalypto,
my number five.
Very nice. I'm sure everyone loved that one. My number five, on the other hand, is a film that I've always loved, and it's Stakeout.
Wow.
Stakeout, yeah. So Richard Dreyfuss and Emilio Estevez. It's a buddy cop film. And there's, again, another Stakeout is the thing.
No room for another Stakeout?
No, dude. If I could do a U and put them both in here, I would. Right? The difference between the films is that the first Stakeout is, I would say, it's very similar in tone to, say, Lethal Weapon, where it's a buddy cop thing. There's action more, but it's a little bit, but it's comedy as well.
It's nowhere near as action filled as Lethal Weapon.
No, but like its seriousness gives you a level of, because there's Madeline Stowe in it and stuff like that, and she's a damsel in distress. It is played relatively straight. Another Stakeout, the sequel,
yep,
is pure, much more comedy forward.
Yeah. That's what you're saying. It moves further down that
road. Yeah, so
we weren't as good as Lethal Weapon in the action stakes, so let's maybe make it more our own thing. Okay.
And I think it worked wonderfully well, because like it's funny. Rosie O'Donnell's in it. It makes it really funny. Anyway, so, but I...
Well, there's words you've never heard before.
No, she's great in that film. I'd never heard of her before she turned up in that film. I thought she was great. So, you know, one guy talking. But this movie here, the reason it's great is that these two guys are just giving each other shit the whole time. A little bit like this show.
Wait a second. What?
But the
can
way
you, can you explain that again?
No, eat my dick. Are you going to put a goddamn
sound on? I was going to put a sound effect there. But I forgot to take it off mute.
There you go. Suck some dick. Suck some dick, sir. But yes, no, another Stakeout as well is... And Aidan Quinn is like the bad guy. He is actually quite menacing. It works pretty well. So I've just always... It's been like a favorite of mine for years.
Fair
so
enough, fair
on
enough.
The list.
I've only watched it once, I think, way back then. So I couldn't really tell you.
This is back. Richard Dreyfuss is an action-ish star as well. It's a bit funny. Like, but that's it still works.
That's still a stretch, man.
Yeah. It's amazing.
All right. My number four is one of the greatest... I think, advancements in technology that we ever witnessed in film.
Mm.
From 1988, the man who is very good at this kind of thing, Robert Zemeckis.
Bobby Zeb.
Yep. Who framed Roger Rabbit?
Wow.
Yeah.
One of four.
This film holds up like most other films on this list do not.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Because it is that set in that fictional world where toons are real.
Mm-hmm.
So Eddie Vallant is played by Bob Hoskins, who's a real life detective.
Yes.
Who comes into Toontown, or doesn't want to go to Toontown, but in... whatever you want to call it, Hollywood, is investigating a crime. It's basically a film noir. I'm not quite sure why it didn't pop up.
It's probably
a straightforward noir, not a neo-noir, so that's why.
Yeah, that's why.
And it's great. So they become this, again, buddy cop kind of, buddy private investigator type thing, odd couple investigating this crime, and Jessica Rabbit, we're concerned she is a femme fatale, yes. Or is she?
Yes, exactly. You're not quite sure.
Then how it all goes from there.
That's right. Now, this is the anti-cool world. This is where a thing like this worked. Cool World tried to happen. It is a horrendous, horrendous film.
How can a film where Kim Basinger as a sexy character fail
exactly
at that time in life? Well,
and Brad Pitt fucks her. Still failed. I know. It's wackadoodle-doo. But this one is the shit. I think most people understand this. This is where all the technology came. Like
that opening sequence, I remember being in the cinema for
yeah?
it.
Yeah?
Where, you know, it's all the cartoon, and then it's Roger walking off the set.
Yeah,
in a real world.
I remember that.
Interacting and the baby's behind him doing shit with real stuff.
Smoking
and
shit.
It looks so fucking good.
Yeah. Because they used shadow machines back then, man.
Holy shit. Again,
eyelines, shit like that.
Ahead of the game.
Totally. All right. Nice one. My number four is Con Air, so we're going straight back to you, son.
Woo. All right. Well, my number three is staying on the cage through his best era, as you've described it, from the same year, I should say, as Con Air. Face. Off.
Off. Okay. Now, all of my rest of my list has been mentioned. So just be advised, you're now going to talk for a long time.
Oh, shit. You don't have my two or one. You have my one. Damn.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Face Off is just hilariously good fun.
It's the balls, people.
It's a stupid film. We all understand this.
Okay. So here's the thing. Right? I know that you get that a lot. And it's that it is stupid insofar as like none of this could really happen. No. However, I remember when we watched it, I remember thinking to myself, there's very little here that they're asking us to swallow.
Well, they're asking us to believe that, for example, John Travolta's body size is exactly the same as Nicolas Cage's size.
No, they mentioned that.
Penis size.
No, the penis, the two bits that are tough about this are the cock, right? Because if anyone doesn't know, it's about this, like, you know, the terrorist Nicolas Cage and the Castor Troy, yes. And the FBI agent John Travolta, who is after him the whole
John
time.
John Archer? Is
that his name? Sean Archer. And he tracks him down, and they basically, there's this fight between them both, and then Castor Troy gets fucked up. Long story short, through various things, Archer undergoes surgery to remove his face so he can go undercover.
He has to find a bomb, which is planted somewhere, right, and only his brother, who's in prison, knows about.
Right, and then Castor Troy wakes up, manages to take the only face available, John Travolta's, so now they've switched identities.
Because apparently sticking the brother in Guantanamo Bay or the equivalent thereof was not enough to get him to talk.
That's right. And also he was fucked up. So,
Very hard to believe.
Well, you know, I mean, the point now is that these two have switched places and no one knows because Castro killed all
And shenanigans ensue. Great. And it's directed by John Woo, so there's doves and heaps of slow-mo and very slow music over the top of the slow-mo and squibs going off everywhere and bullets exploding and just cool shit all the way through.
Total cool shit. And that's why, and Castor Troy then, as John Travolta, fucks John Travolta's wife,
yep.
And she doesn't seem to notice that his dick is probably different. Now, they may have had the same cock, because they're both white men, but...
Not sure that's the way it works.
I'm not sure it is either. Maybe they're a similar height. I don't know. That, and the fact that he got off the prison island, somehow, is the only two
magically
massive bullshit bits. But otherwise,
other than you can buy into the, but you just have to get with the main premise. If you don't, then fair enough. Then this film will suck for you.
Well, interestingly, Paul, this movie was actually written to be set in the future, and that's why it was like you'd be easier to buy that this technology was there in the future. John Woo is the one who said, no, let's bring it back to modern day and make it more relatable. The only part that stayed, which was futuristic, is that prison island where they had magnetic boots. That was apparently an actual scene in the future set one, and they just said, nah, keep that. So that was cool. Another thing is that John Travolta, he asked the writers if they were making fun of him with that ridiculous chin line that they've talked about him. It says, like, you know, he's giving himself shit. They said, no, Castor is such a narcissist that he'd hate having anyone else's face. That's why. So there was actually those kind of negotiations going on. And do you remember the Over the Rainbow scene?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Slow music over.
That was a John Woo thing. It wasn't in the script. He said, I want to fight for this. And the studio didn't like it. And then finally they let him have it.
And that's a mistake. It goes on too long. That's my memory.
I think... But I do remember it, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was better to see, like, that... I don't know. Yeah, it was a little long.
I think the bit where they're, you know, backs to the wall, talking to each other and fall away, shooting at the wall, that stuff's way cooler than fucking in the Over the Rainbow or the stupid boat stunt, all that shit.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, clearly stuntmen who don't look anything like their counterparts.
Well, you know what was really weird? The fucking dude, the bald dude, his Gina Gershon is his sister in the film.
Yep.
He gets shot in the back of the head. He's got a few more minutes of life. Doesn't want to show her. Grabs her. Makes out with her. His own sister. Ooh, then she leaves.
I forgot that.
Yeah, that happened. And I'm like, ew. That's not the last thing you want. This is weird. But then the actual character, I thought that up. And I think they'd just be these kind of fucked up people where that would be a thing he'd do. And I'm like, damn. Obviously, you never had a sister. That shit don't go down.
Yeah, no. I don't have a sister, but I can imagine.
No. You don't do that shit.
All right then, Wayne, what's your number three?
Number three is High Fidelity.
Wow, that is high up.
Yeah, man.
All right, so anything you need to say about that?
Just other than that, it makes me feel like I felt at that age, like that's how my life kind of, I think I remember my life. Not as cool, obviously. Never banged Lisa Bonet. But other than that, like, you know.
Yet. All right, my number two is clearly not on your list, which is a little bit of a disappointment to me. And I know I talk about it a lot, but I just feel the need to defend this film whenever I can. Armageddon.
Oh, fuck it up. That's the one I left off, right? That's the one I left off. All right, Armageddon. Now, try and remember, Paul.
I watched it not that long ago again. Still enjoyed the fuck out of it.
After you skipped the fucking animal cracker scene?
No.
Oh, okay.
I let it play through. I did cringe still at it.
Yeah, we always...
But every animal cracker scene, we get a... Leaving on a jet plane.
That was fucking horrible, too.
Don't know.
That was a piece of shit. That
scene. And then the Trevor Jones score, and they're all walking out slow-mo, right stuffing it.
That's fine. But that leaving on a jet plane scene?
I didn't mind that bit.
Why? He's half... They're like looking around, and then she's like, oh, and he grabs up in her arms. I'm like, what is this shit? I don't know, man. That's 1920.
Billy Bob Thornton is awesome in this movie. Bruce Willis. Remember back when he was great?
Yeah.
He's great in this movie. He was the one that said, I gotta die in this
movie. I know. That's the gangster
shit.
Otherwise,
he would have got off.
Right?
That's not sure who would have died.
That made it so much more of a movie. So, look, I love
Armageddon. I'm sure J.J. Abrams had a go at this script too.
Did he?
Yeah, he's got a co-writing credit.
He's been around forever, man. Mm. No, this was like, oh yeah, I understand. Like, this was a pure happy gung-ho wicked. I remember everyone talking about it at the time.
This is one of those films where I saw it at the cinema and was like uplifted watching, like, holy shit, this is cinema.
And remember.
And I know it's dumb. I know. You don't have to get at me out about that. I get it. It's a stupid, stupid film.
That's never been
a
problem.
Which has somewhere in the order of 470 infactual moments. Or maybe I'm making that number up, but I recently did a bit on the I think it's out on their Patreon feed on the Binge Movies podcast. Yeah. Good friend of the show, Jason, had me on to talk Armageddon. So I got to watch it again for that purpose. And then he basically grilled me as to why I still like it, given I'm a harsh person normally about films.
Oh, this is pure nostalgia. We like this because of nostalgia.
But I watched it again and still enjoyed it, Wayne. I didn't shit on it.
Because of nostalgia. I'm just saying. I remember how we felt when we saw this. Remember, we're Aussies in Australia watching a movie that's pretty jingoistic about Americans saving the world.
For sure.
And love the shit out of it. So it's no problem at all, see? So this is, in the end, you just opt for fun, Paul.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
You don't often, but this
sometimes
is one of the times
the
you
currents
have.
Are right. The mood is right. Where it should be.
That's right. Your dick has got butter on it. It's fine. It's just like, you know, you just go with it.
Armageddon is my number two. What's yours?
Nice one. My number two is Face Off.
Yeah, okay. That's pretty close. Yeah, 2-3. That's not a problem. All right, then. Running back through my 10 through 2, then revealing my number one. 10, Signs. 9, High Fidelity. 8, of course, The Prestige. 7, Con Air. 6, Air Force One. 5, Apocalypto. 4, Who Framed Roger Rabbit. 3, Face Off. Number 2, Armageddon. And my number one, unquestionably, straight away, immediately, the moment this list was agreed upon, is Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers. Wow. I didn't see that on the list.
Yeah, it's there.
No, I'm sure it's there, but I just didn't see it. Starship Troopers.
Yeah, man.
Dude.
This will be on your list, right?
I didn't see it on the list.
But it would be.
Yeah, it would be because we had such a good time in it. Paul, tell us about Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers is Paul Verhoeven at his absolute peak in the 90s, following on a bunch of years after Basic Instinct and this particular satirical take on the armed forces and fascism and the like has basically us take on a bunch of
alien bugs
that are trying, well, so we're told, trying to destroy
the
world.
They're massive. They're like
but
big,
it turns
huge
out that we pretty much bombed them first, so we're the aggressors and they're just defending themselves.
Yes, and the movie itself is very Robocop-ish in its harshness. It's got the same thing where everyone's co-ed showers.
This is an anti-war film, basically.
Yeah, it's an anti-war film because it shows the good guys, us, as
getting
being
torn to pieces.
Basically Nazis.
Just about every character, not every character, 3 or 4 main characters live. Everyone else gets skewered, killed, blown up, ripped to pieces, eaten alive. And it's just brutal as fuck. And all the money was spent on the special effects, which at the time were among the best ever put to film.
No, it holds up, I think. And I remember back in the day, people, when it came out, Paul and I loved this film. And it was one of those things where if you recommend it to your friends, you got to see this. And then a lot of them hated it.
Yep.
And it was like, okay, now this is like we're fucking gearing up and shit to go into the comment section. But there was no comment section back then. It was just motherfuckers talking at you.
Yeah,
so
the low scores at the time from the critics have been, it's one of those films that has since grown in estimation. And as people, more and more people say, I'm not going to pretend back in 1997 when I watched the first time I saw the anti-war, the anti-fascism.
Oh, no, I didn't know any of that shit.
That Verhoeven was going for. I see it now. Back at the time, I just enjoyed the kick-ass, gory action spectacle where, you know, stupid shit like Casper Van Dien.
Speaking of which,
and Patrick Muldoon fighting for Denise Richards, because who wouldn't fight for Denise Richards back in that time?
Absolutely, but that was all good, man. That was Wild Things era. Now, here's the thing, though. Like Casper Van Dien, where'd he go? He was the lead in the film.
Johnny
I know everyone
Rico.
Shat on it. Johnny Rico, he's fucking beautiful, right? More beautiful than Denise Richards, almost.
He can't act for shit. Like that's where he went.
Okay,
he went into direct.
He was the male model
sequel.
Who walked
this
in
is,
there.
This film's had like 4 sequels.
He did all right, I thought.
All gone straight to video. I don't think he's ever been in a big role in another mainstream
release.
Yeah,
no, that's I just would have thought someone would have given him something.
Well, the only one who's really had a big career afterwards is Neil Patrick Harris.
That's a good point. Denise Richards, well, she was a Bond
girl. Well, she married Charlie Sheen.
Oh, forgot about that. Yeah.
Got a lot of tiger blood in her, had tiger blood's children. And now she's like a housewives of whatever it is, Beverly Hills or Hollywood or some shit. I don't know.
She did a guest spot on 30 Rock playing herself as the leader of a moron group. Like it's basically, that's the whole episode. She's actually poking fun of herself. I'm quite surprised. Yeah, there you go.
It's nice. She's got that thicker skin.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love this film and it's absolutely my top 100 films of all time and quite high up there.
Fuck.
As we will eventually hear.
Okay, I forgot that this aspect of Paul's personality. Speaking of which,
give us your 10 through 2, Wayne, and then reveal your number 1.
My number 10 was Deuce Bigalow, Male Gigolo, What Up? 9, Enemy of the State. 8, Count of Monte Cristo. 7, Reign of Fire. 6, Signs. 5, Stakeouts. 4,
Stakeouts.
Stakeouts. 4, Con Air. 3, High Fidelity. 2, Face Off. And my number 1, of course, is The Prestige.
Of course it is.
It's just the best shit ever. What are you going to do, right?
Yeah.
Tesla.
Well,
both David Bowie, son. Break yourself.
Break yourself. Any honorable mentions, Wayne?
Tons. There's a movie called Deceived with Goldie Hawn in it, which I actually really, really
vaguely remember that film.
Yeah, very cool. Ransom. I like Ransom. Give me back my son.
Nice.
The Insider, Gangster. I loved Cocktail. That almost got on the list.
Ooh.
I know.
Someone there, someone in the Facebook listening community said, if Wayne has Cocktail any higher number 8, I riot.
Almost made it. The Rocketeer, and I liked a film called Tough Guys, which was
Kirk Douglas?
Kirk Douglas and Burt Lancaster as they're old. I just loved it. It was a really cool film.
Cool. There you are. I had My Science Project from 1985.
Oh, word up. That's a great show.
Sort of in the ilk of Back to the Future. No one saw it. It got fucking panned by the critics. John Stockwell and Fisher Stevens.
I remember now.
The main character. Dennis Hopper popping up as a hippie teacher in the film as well.
I remember it completely now. It's a funky, funky future. Yes. Yeah, I remember that shit. Yeah.
I love that film as a kid. Really? Rewatched it today. Hoping to sneak this on and, you know, surprise a few people, but I couldn't quite get it there, unfortunately.
It's tough.
Rain of Fire and An Innocent Man.
Tom Selleck.
Yeah,
that was a harsh movie, man. And fucking Sledgehammer was in it too.
Doug that shit. Doug, yeah, he was. He was a cop.
That's right.
There we are. That's our list for the top 10 Touchstone picture films. What about yours? Let's hear what you had to say about the topic at hand in the segment that ends every episode. It's called The Pop 10.
Talk about Pop 10. Talk about
kicking off this week's Pop 10 with John Huslander, who said, dang, tough lift list. Really tough. Have two of M. Night's best, Signs and Unbreakable. And I know movies like Rain of Fire. Good luck, boys. Fair I'm enough. Going with number 3, Unbreakable. Still my favorite M. Night film.
Fair enough.
Number 2, The Color of Money. T to the C, baby.
Did you like Color of Money?
I don't know if I've ever seen it.
Really?
Isn't it a remake or is it a sequel?
It's a sequel to The Hustler. Yeah, that's why Paul Newman's in it. Yeah.
And number 1, I thought this would be on the list, Wayne. Oh, brother, where art thou?
Yeah, it's on an honorable mention.
Well, except you didn't mention it in your honorables.
I know, because I have like a really big list and I had to stop it somewhere.
Okay. Cohen's at their peak, according to John. Thank you for that. Adam Allure, top level page of the show, said number 3, Signs. Number 2, the Prestige. Number 1, What About Bob?
Yeah, I liked What About Bob. Another Richard Dreyfuss, Bill Murray joint.
I didn't love it, especially as a therapist
later. Yeah, actually you would hate it though, because okay, fair enough.
The aforementioned Dean Jeffrey from the IMDb Movie Journey podcast, Movie Journey podcast, sorry, that's what they've moved on to now. Number 3, 10 Things I Hate About You.
I love that shit.
Number 2, Can't Buy Me Love.
Really? Patrick Dempsey?
And number 1, Mr. Destiny.
Jim Belushi.
Yep.
I actually liked that. It wouldn't go on the list. Interesting.
Barely remember it.
But no, it's one of those what if kind of
things. I love the different take on it. So thank you for that. My brother, Adam, he said number 3, Con Air. Yeah, that's right. Chris Sutherland, put the bunny back in the box. Chris had said he won't vote for anyone who has that on his list. Number 2, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Please, Eddie. And number 1, Starship Troopers. Come on, you apes. You want to live forever? Michael Ironside.
Yes.
Oh, no, that was Johnny Rico said that.
Was it?
Sorry, yeah. It was.
Oh, okay.
They both said it. That's right. When he took him over later. Yeah.
You know.
The aforementioned Chris Sutherland said Sister Act, Face Off, and Three Ninjas. Whoever puts Conair in their list loses my vote. My response was, you had Three Ninjas. You lost mine.
Ballsy.
Rob Walters said, I'm going childhood favorite comedies, given the wide range of films here. Number 3, Captain Ron. Number 2, Captain What Ron, About Bob?
Yeah.
Number 1, The Ref.
What's the ref?
Dennis Leary, Judy Davis, and Kevin Spacey from Memory.
Okay.
Yeah, very talky-talky comedy.
All right.
Christmas film too, I think so.
Wow. Yeah.
Luke Alexander said, wow, some classics in here. Number 3, Face Off. Number 2, Captain Ron. I cut you off before. Anything you want to say about Captain Ron?
Nah, it was just like Kurt Russell. It's cool.
Yep. And number 1 again, What About Bob?
Very popular.
Yeah. Laurie Miller said, number 3, Under the Tuscan Sun. Number 2, Apocalypto. Mel Gibson might be an ass, but he makes some great movies. And number 1, Dead Poets Society. A lot of people would have that one on their list for sure.
Very nice. Diane Lane's ultra MILF, man.
Diane Lane, who did I read the other day she was married to for a period of time?
Really?
So someone not surprising. I'm like, oh, really? They were married? Damn.
Okay, cool.
Robert Fuller said, Real Steel with Hugh Jackman. Starship Troopers number 2. And again, Dead Poets Society at number 1.
Did you see Real Steel?
I did. I liked it.
Yeah, I've not seen it. I've heard good things.
Nicole Presley said, number 3, 3 Men and a Baby. Thought that also might make your list.
Oh, yeah, thinking about it.
Number 2, The Help. And number 1, Armageddon, baby. Yeah, Nicole. Very, very nice.
Josh Brolin and Christopher Lambert were married to
Josh
Diane
Brolin,
Lane.
who it was.
Wow, she married Thanos, son. Break yourself.
Now, lastly, Tamina Harker, or Dan, who said, here is Paul's list predicted before.
Well, this should be good.
Number 10, Starship Troopers. So he got it on there, but well only on its guy. Number 9, Edward, Dark Horse pick. Number 9, 8, Roger Rabbit. 7, Air Force One.
Jeez.
6, The Patriot.
Oh, close.
But I didn't see The Patriot on that list. I went through it, couldn't see it on there.
No, so. I had seen it on there.
Did you?
Because
I looked again.
It's something disappear, man. Disappear.
Number 5, Fright Night, the remake. So,
oh yeah,
number four, Prestige. Wayne's number one. Correct.
There you go. Nice one.
Number three, High Fidelity. Pretty close. Number two, Oh Brother, We're Out There. No, I don't like that film. And number one, Face Off. Not bad.
Not bad. And I think we're getting a bit predictable. Yeah. Something needs to change.
Yep. So that is Brooks. What I came out of that was, you know what our number of episode 400 should be?
What?
Top 10 films that will surprise our listeners that we love.
Okay. Cool.
Something like that might be fun.
Yeah. It's up there. It's so a obscure,
you could maybe rename it as Obscure Gems or whatever you want to call it.
So. I'm done with that. Let's do it.
All right. Well, that's your feedback. Thank you to everyone who got back to us. We're so sorry we couldn't get to all of your feedback. We really do truly appreciate you getting involved with the show and being the lifeblood of it. Wayne, how do the folk get back to us with their lists or indeed general feedback at the topic at hand?
Well, you could go to the countdown
podcast.com. Well, unless you mentioned it this fucking
that's
week.
That's right, cunty. So but I'm still working on it, so give me a little time. Otherwise, Google The Countdown Podcast, find all our socials, or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
The Countdown listener community on Facebook. The link is in the show notes. Like and follow the show through Podbean, where we host as well. Wayne, what's happening next week for episode 370?
Can't remember shit.
I can. It's the top 10, last 10, the next iteration.
Oh, word. That's right.
In that one, so we're going to talk about 10 films we've yet to talk about on the show that we're going to mini review for you, let you know what you should steer clear of, as well as maybe seek out wholeheartedly, hopefully, some good stuff on the list.
Damn right.
And that's it from us today. Thank you so, so much for joining us yet again. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
You are a sad, strange little man, and you have my pity.
We're going to leave Armageddon off your list. We'll catch you next time. See ya! Dumb countdown. Top 10 films where not much happens.
I know.
What will we talk about?
No, here's what it is. We talk
about what's really great is the fact that this fucking film happens out of Africa and there's just lots of fucking talking and it goes for 2.5 hours, maybe close to 3 hours. Fuck, all happens, man.
But then you have to say why is it good? Because there are movies that you know that are good, but not much happens. For example, ah, oh, damn it, I had a list. But I would argue that Drive.
How dare you?
Not much happens in Drive, man.
Fuck off.
Motherfucking, like, you know, like, fuck go off. For a, you go for a drive.
Conversation's
then
over.
Then you go for a motherfucking, like, kid. Then a bitch, like, sing. You know, so it's like.
Guarantee you that list is never happening.